Now to this huge question of how you came to decide that you wanted to have a child or not. Maybe you're working through this question now. Perhaps you were raised with voices around you insisting that parenthood would be your destiny. Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Merle Bombardieri is a clinical social worker, psychotherapist. Practice focuses on parenthood decision-making. She's a parent and decision-making coach, and her book called The Baby Decision, it first came out more than 40 years ago. Merle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm especially happy, Kate, to be here for your fundraiser, because there's nothing more important than keeping public radio alive, especially in these difficult times.
Oh, thank you so much for that. And, you know, you have this keen insight because you've seen nearly two generations of people grapple with this decision of whether to be a parent. And I'm wondering, what has changed or stayed the same about working through this compared to the late 70s or early 80s?
Sure. One of the things that has changed is it's become more socially acceptable to discuss with your family and friends whether or not you want to have a child. When the book, the first edition came out in 1981, people walked around with plain brown wrappers over the book because they, first of all, they didn't want to, people were thinking about that they were, thinking of having children. And secondly, they didn't want anyone else's input. So that's changed dramatically. The thing that hasn't changed enough, I will give you a little more of the history, but really powerful and really important for today's conversation. What hasn't changed enough is there's still so much prejudice against people who choose to be child-free, even though it's a perfectly good life choice and child-free people contribute to the world in so many different and wonderful ways. It is more socially acceptable now than it was in 1978 when I started this work, but there's still so much cruelty and misunderstanding towards people who make that decision.
Where do you think that comes from? Where do you think these prejudices originate?
You know, there are a lot of different ideas about that. I think that some people say it's the whole whole mandate to reproduce in keeping our population alive, and that somehow that's somewhere in our genes or how our brains work or whatever. But I think that people are threatened by the idea that people can choose the life that works for them. And there are many people who actually, even though they love their children, did not enjoy parenting, did not wish to have as many kids as they had. And they're sort of taking it out on people choosing to be child-free by saying that they're selfish. Or that they'll never be, you know, real grown-ups, and that women will never be full women. So I think it can threaten people's ideas about their own lives.
You have this mantra, I suppose you could say it that way, that you've been a child-free advocate since 1978, but you also have two daughters. Can you parse that out for us? Because that's going in two different directions.
I know, it's really funny. I'm so happy it turned out that way. So it's been really important to me to not advocate either choice. And when I first met my husband, we fell in love. He proposed to me. And at first I said, I don't think so. I said, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, but you want children. You come from a wonderful Italian family where children is the cat's meow. And I'm not sure I ever want to have a child. So we went through a period of about a year and a half in which I learned more about children and worked with children, found some role models of mothers who were enjoying both having serious careers and also enjoying their children. And so that was a growth process for me and for us as a couple. So it made me very interested in how people went about making that choice.
Oh, that's interesting, because that can really divide couples. That can split them apart over
absolutely.
This question.
And Kate, there are so many people disagreeing about this right now that one of the reasons I'm writing a new book about parenthood decision-making is that this comes back to your history question. For most of the years I've been doing this work, couples who disagree decide the decision that allows them to stay together and that will work best for the couple. So someone who, if they had been married to someone else, would have had a child, agrees to be child-free to keep the relationship together. Someone who's kind of likes children but would not have chosen to be a parent will go ahead and have a child. So that's what's been going on for the most of the last 40 years. But what's happening more and more with this millennial generation is people are breaking up. They're breaking up with people they're madly in love with, who they've been married to or living with for 5 or even 10 or even 15 years, because they have the idea that this question is so important. Neither one wants to impose their choice on the other. And it's too early to see, does this actually make for happier people to find other partners, to give up the loves of their life? So it's a very interesting question that I've been participating in conversations with a Reddit subgroup called Fence Sitter. And at least 3 or 4 questions come up of couples who are disagreeing on this topic. So it's a really, really big change.
We have Merle Bombardieri, a psychotherapist specializing in parenthood decision-making. We'll keep this conversation going ahead and how to support people who are in the midst of this decision to have a child or not. Your thoughts, what you have encountered, 800-642-1234. There's more conversation in store here on the Ideas Network. Now to the decision over whether to become a parent. The United Nations said last month that 2 billion people now live in conflict areas of the world, and that's a quarter of the globe. Some people who choose to live child-free point to the rising world population or the toll on humanity from violence and human rights violations. Bring your decision-making about parenthood to the conversation, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Clinical social worker Merle Bombardieri stays with us. Her practice is focused on these huge decisions. Merle, here in the pandemic, what have you seen about this big decision?
Well, it has been really heartbreaking for so many people. You know, there were people who were in the middle of getting fertility treatment or in the middle of adoption processes during the pandemic. And a lot of adoption agencies shut down, fertility clinics shut down. People who were pregnant had to worry about protecting themselves from disease. So many young families, the baby's birth was just the mother in the hospital. And fathers were not allowed to be there. Many grandparents didn't see their grandchildren for many months. And so many people have thought, wow, in addition to the climate change with this pandemic and the possibility of future pandemics, I don't want to have a child. But really interesting, Kate, is other people went in the opposite direction. They noticed that their nieces and nephews, their friends with families, that hanging out at home together and doing all kinds of rituals, having meals together, getting through a difficult time together, really made them see family life as even more attractive than it ever was before, and have decided to go ahead and have a child.
It was interesting earlier, you talked about career, and that for many people has changed a lot in these times. How do you coach people through the question of, you know, how will becoming a parent, how will becoming that mom or that dad affect my career?
Well, it is a very difficult decision. And one of the things that often happens is that people think they need to come up with their own solutions. And they do. They do need to be creative about the work they're doing and negotiating for time off and so on. But it's really at the international level and the national level and the state level that we don't have enough supports for parents. And that's why it's so hard to have careers. All kinds of research shows that women in Europe continue with their careers beautifully, even when there are young children at home. And one interesting thing about the internet is I have the pleasure and privilege of coaching people all over the world. Hmm. When I talk to people who are in Europe or even here in North America and Canada who have a year and a half of paid leave, things are so different. It's, you know, a lot of why we don't have the career opportunities for women has to do with the services that are not offered. And the corporate level is really important too. So we really need to have paid leave. And so many corporations say, well, that's the government's job. But corporations have a lot of money. They really lose when they lose excellent workers. And so we have to look at this, you know, on larger levels, not just what can I or we do as a couple or me as this person in my career, but what services do we need that are not being provided and how do we participate in making them happen?
I think a parallel to that is people having a child later and later in life. You know, when infertility increases or becomes more erratic, I'm wondering how that later, you know, advanced maternal age, if you will, the clinical wording for it, but how that factors into this decision about whether to be that parent when it's later in life.
Yes, well, that is really important. And that's one of the things that the pandemic has made a problem, because many people thought that they were going to earn a little more money in their career, maybe travel a little and then start trying for a child. But now if they try now, they're going to be 2 or 3 years older than they were when they would have started. So although it can be harder to get pregnant and harder to maintain pregnancy, most older women do have healthy pregnancies. And there are actually some advantages to being an older parent in that people are more mature and I'm trying to say that many people get to have two adulthoods. If you start having a family at say 38 or so, even though there may be more fertility problems, you get to have a whole 20-year adulthood of as a child-free person, establishing a career, finding the right person to love and to marry.
And
you are so much more ready to settle down.
We're going to pause right there, Merle Bombardieri, and we'll pick this up ahead here with Merle on the Ideas Network. Now we look more closely at the conversation on parenthood, how to figure out when or if it's right. It's a deeply personal decision. A Pew Research Center study late last year found that birth rates in our country dropped in the pandemic, and there's a growing share of childless adults in our country. Maybe that is you. Join in. 800-642-1234. Conversation on parenthood decision-making right here at 800-642-1234. We have psychotherapist Merle Bombardieri, who specializes in this, how to make the most of a child-free life, and stays with us. Let's go to Janet now in La Crosse. Hi, Janet. What is your story?
Hi. I thought I should call in just because I learned something new. Growing up in, you know, in Wisconsin, I never thought it was that big of a deal. You know, if you want kids, have them. If you don't, you know, don't worry about it. Just, you know, whatever fits you. Well, anyway, I've gotten to this point in my life. I'm in my early 60s, and I realize now that if I could go back, I would definitely do it again, in a way where I'd have at least one child, if not more, because I realize that at this point my parents have died. I was real close to my husband died, my best friend died of that Lou Gehrig's disease, and my sister and brother are moved in out of state, and so I was just noticing that, gosh, you know, I'm really alone. And the thing is like holidays and stuff, I hang out with my dogs, which is fine, but I kind of think I did a dumb thing.
Janet, let's hear from Merle. Yes, Janet, thank you.
Okay. I'm not sure I heard you correctly. Did you say you wish you had one more child and you actually do have a child or children?
No. I apologize. No, I have no children. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And if I could do it over again, I would have children.
Okay. I think that is a really, really important perspective. I'm so glad to hear you say this. And I'm not sure this is the right place to say it, but I'd actually be interested in interviewing you for my next book. I'll shut up about that, and the radio station can help us get in contact if you're interested. But I think this is so important. There are many good things about being child-free, but aging is difficult. And again, we have to look at our society, because aging in other societies and other times, the older people have been less isolated. They've had more contact with the younger generation and been parts of communities that are of all ages. But I think your perspective is very important. And interestingly enough, from your comment, is that one of the main questions that comes up in my participation in this 43,000 member fence sitter group on Reddit is, I want to be child-free, but what about old age? And so there's a lot of conversation about being involved with the younger generation, being part of a community and so on. But it is a serious, serious drawback to being child-free. And I really appreciate your pointing this out to us. And may you find the connections, the love, and the community that makes you feel cared for and involved.
I imagine, too, you have to figure out how to be flexible with people you coach through this, because perhaps at a different stage in life, they're very set and feel like they've arrived at their decision. And then that evolution, or perhaps something happens, and then that triggers decision-making all over again. What is that like?
Well, what I tell people when they say, why can't I make this decision? I should be able to just be happy moving life forward. The word decide comes from a Latin root meaning to cut away from. So every decision involves loss. The existential psychotherapist Erwin Yalom said, for every yes, there must be a no. Decisions are so expensive because they cost you everything else. Hmm. So part of the key to decision making is grieving what you won't get by the decision that you made, and doing the best you can to add pieces of that to your life anyway. So for a child-free person to think, are there ways that I want to nurture, even if I'm mentoring 20-year-olds at work? Are there ways I want to be involved in children? How will I have community? For people who choose to be parents but are introverts and love to meditate and love to backpack, mountain climb in the wilderness, how can we bring some pieces of that into our lives? And it's also important to mention that not everybody who's child-free chose that. People have been through infertility, people don't have a child because their partner didn't want one, and many other circumstances. So there are many ways that people can wind up being child-free, and it's so important for society to recognize and value all people and look to have both old age opportunities for community, including co-housing and ways of living together for all people. And as many parents point out, if you have one kid who lives in Japan and another one who lives on the other side of the continent, even if you have children, aging doesn't necessarily mean that you get to spend time with your family.
How do you be supportive to someone who has made the decision? How do you be that supportive, parent of a son or daughter who has found that they want to live without children?
You mean someone who's already had a child?
No, like if you are the parent and you want grandchildren, but you know, your son or daughter has made that decision, like there will be no grandchildren. How do you support that decision?
Well, it's really important that we listen to the would-be grandparents. A lot of times people who choose to be child-free just want their parents to support them, and they need to understand that all those years that they were raising you, they were picturing grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Mm. You're not obligated to have those kids if you're going to be miserable. And in the abstract and in the future, your parents wouldn't be happy to see you miserable even if they got to be grandparents. But just as it took you time to make your decision and to grieve the losses on the other side, you need to give your parents a chance to grieve that decision. And so it's really important to be compassionate, to listen, when they're ready to talk about ways that they may be involved with other children. Some parents are really happy when their children who decide to be child-free point out, now we can spend more time with you since we won't be raising kids. We'll be able to have more vacations together. We'll be able to spend more time together. Another thing which is really lovely is that for some people who choose to be child-free, especially women whose parents are unhappy about this, they often have had parents who have been feminist and really encouraged them to do whatever they want and not hold back because they're women. And so in those situations, to say, Mom and Dad, you encouraged me to go for it, even though it wasn't socially popular among children and teenagers, it's because you encouraged me to be a maverick that I have the ability to listen to myself, what works for me and my partner, and go forward as a child-free person. And here are the ways that I think being child-free is going to make me happy. I hope you'll understand. And to be willing to listen and be compassionate goes a long way.
We're talking with clinical social worker Merle Bombardieri. She's a parent and decision-making coach. We're talking about that decision around whether to become a parent. With your perspective, 800-642-1234. Merle, there are many ways a family can be made. And the Williams Institute says about 6 million children in the U.S. had an LGBT parent in 2019. And there's this stigma behind how this community raises children. How can couples overcome those societal opinions?
So one thing that jumps out at me is when I was writing the 2016 edition of my book, there was a quote that was, if we decide not to have children because we are worried about what people will think, we're allowing them to define our lives. Hmm. People who are single, people who are gay, can be just as good parents as anybody else. And so one thing that's really crucial is support. There's so many wonderful online support groups for gay parents. There are organizations that help with adoption, with surrogacy, with fertility. There are just so many great ways to approach this. And it is much better. This is part of the history again. There's much more acceptance of people as part of the gay community becoming parents now than it was before. And one other interesting thing I'll say is that some gay parents say they're pleasantly surprised how well their child has been accepted in school and in the community. Part of that is education. About diversity. Some of it is that so many families aren't white nuclear families anyway. There are children of divorce, there are children of single mothers by choice, and so on. So there are many ways to have a family, and there is more acceptance than there used to be.
Merle, I find that being a parent isn't predictable, and I can be this super organized person, which I feel like I am at heart, and still as a parent, there are so many unpredictable things that come up with children that make me feel that I don't have it all together. How do you coach people on that uncertainty and that mandated vulnerability that you're going to have not being in control in parenthood?
Well, one important thing is to have community. You know, there's been a lot of perfectionism on the internet, which makes absolutely no sense. So one of the most important things is to have communities, to be in contact with men and women whose children are older, with experts, to get together in playgroups online and learn what is normal and what isn't, to feel empowered, to listen to oneself. And it's really good that there are new books and podcasts and so on that really empower parents to trust themselves more. And I understand that you have four children.
I do.
That is quite amazing. I think you could tell, I could interview you.
And we're almost out of time here, but where do people, you see, you know, from the late 70s to the current, where there are podcasts and so many, you know, social media places where people can find a voice and find others in this position? I would imagine that has helped a lot.
It really has. It's made a huge difference to be able to find out what other parents are thinking and doing. Mm-hmm. And organizations like Postpartum Support International, organizations like International Child Free Week, a lot of different podcasts and groups and meetup groups and, you know, online groups for support of child-free people as well.
Merle, thank you for joining us.
It was my pleasure, and I'm especially happy to participate in your fundraising because that's so crucial for our well-being of our society.
Merle Bombardieri, clinical social worker and psychotherapist, a parent, a decision-making coach, wrote the book The Baby Decision, first published, by the way, in 1981. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.